She's Tori.
And he's Nick.
And this is I Want to Rewatch.
An X-Files podcast, season 3.
Episode 3.
DPO. This episode originally aired October 6, 1995. It was written by Howard Gordon and directed by Kim Manners.
In it, Mulder and Scully arrive at a small town in Oklahoma to investigate the fourth lightning death in a short span of time. The sheriff isn't really sure why they're bothering, but the deaths do seem to be similar in at least one way. They were all young men in the same age range. They also may be connected to one person, a young man who works as a mechanic and who was the first person to be struck by lightning but survived.
Ooh. It had a viewership of 15.57 million, which is down 1.6 million from the last episode.
Paperclip.
From Paperclip, yeah.
So we open on this overhead shot of a convertible and we zoom down into the car. And then we kind of like flip up and we see like the front of the car from inside the car. And we see there's an antenna flag on the car for AB Pizza. Nobody cooks like Aunt B, and it's kind of designed to look like Domino's Pizza. So, yeah. And the car is parked outside of a video arcade. Inside, there are rows and rows of video games, as one would expect in a video arcade. But the place is mostly empty, except for one guy playing Sega Virtual Fighter 2. This is Jack Hammond, and he's wearing a pizza uniform that matches the car's flag. Another guy, Darren, comes up behind him and is like, "Hey, I was playing that game. I just went to take a whiz, man, but like, that's my game." And Jack ignores him. And then he loses the round and he swears and he pushes away from the machine. And then he asks Darren if he's got a problem, because Darren has like been like right there the whole time, right? And he's like, "Well, that's my game. I was playing it." And Jack calls him a pinhead and then says like, "Well, now you're not," which I don't understand what that means, but anyway.
And well, then now you're not playing it.
Was that what pinhead means? I don't know what pin.
What pinhead means? I don't know. I think it's
I thought pinhead meant something else, but yeah, anyway. So anyway, then Jack puts another coin in the machine and like goes to play again, right? And then this other guy, Zero, appears and tells Jack that it's Darren's game and warns him he should step aside. And Jack is like, "You guys want to play a game? I'll play a game." And he grabs Darren by the shirt collar and says, "I'll go first." And then he like, boom, like slams him down against the game cabinet. You know, like falls on the ground, and then all the lights in the arcade go out. And Zero's like, "Oh man, you shouldn't have done that." And Jack is like, "Why? What's he gonna do?" And then the jukebox in the arcade turns on, and it's a CD jukebox. And we see it pick up a CD and drops it down, and it starts playing. And then Darren gets up and asks if it's his turn now. Jack gets kind of spooked, and so he leaves. So he gets in his car and he turns it on. But when he turns it on, the radio in his car is playing the same song as what was playing on the jukebox in the arcade. So that kind of freaks him out. So then he tries to like change it and turn the channel, but like it won't change. It won't turn off. It just keeps playing. And then he sees that Darren is watching him through the arcade doors. So he tries to drive away, puts it in gear. And then like all these sparks fly out of the engine compartment and the car just like dies, boom, in the parking lot. And he's trying to restart it, but won't restart. And then he sees the pizza flag on the antenna. It like bursts into flame and like sizzles up, and then Jack starts to shake like he's having like a seizure or something, and then his head slams against the window because like for some reason all the windows are rolled up even though the top is down, and he smashes the window with his head, and then he falls over across the seat, and we see smoke curling up out of his mouth, and then Darren walks away from the window, and then Zero smiles and holds up a quarter. And Darren says, "I feel a new record coming on." And then he touches it and it turns on. And then it's the theme song.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah.
So Zero is played by Jack Black, which I had zero memory of him being on The X-Files. So it was just kind of cool to see him.
Zero memory.
That was not on purpose, but that was cool. I could give you a list of his credits, but come on, you know who Jack Black is. Tenacious D, School of Rock, Jumanji. He was also in an episode of one of my favorite shows of all time, which is Community. He's just, Jack Black is amazing. And so it was really fun to see him. He's like super young here.
Yeah, I mean, aside from like the facial hair that he has in various, like I think he's probably looked like Jack Black when he was born. Like he came out of the womb like with that haircut, probably. I think so. Yeah, and those eyebrows. So
yeah,
yeah, it's Jack Black.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's always looked the same.
Yeah, he does look very much like you would expect Jack Black to look. And yeah. Speaking of famous people, Darren Oswald is played by Giovanni Ribisi, which like that's a name that I recognize. And when I saw the actor's face, I definitely recognized his face. I was like, oh, that guy looks familiar. I could not have told you that was Giovanni Ribisi. Wouldn't have connected the two. He's had recurring roles on shows like The Wonder Years, Friends, My Two Dads, My Name is Earl. He was in That Thing You Do, The Commish. But he's just one of those actors who I've never like connected his name to his face. So there you go.
Yeah, he looks super familiar. But honestly, I couldn't tell you if he looks familiar because I saw him in things or because like I like interacted with people in real life who look like him. He's just got one of those faces.
Yeah, so. He does. And then Jack Hammond is played by Mar Andersons, who was Halverson in .com. So we have seen him before.
We have seen him die in 2 episodes.
Yes, so. Twice now.
Yes, all right. Yeah, this is a weird teaser because it kind of tells you everything you need to know about the show. Like electricity is obviously involved, right? Because like all the power goes out and the jukebox and like the radio is acting weird, the sparks, right? Smoke is coming out of his body, something like we do see. I don't know if you noticed or not, but in the first scene, and we'll see it later, but in the first scene, we do get a hint of like some severe scarring on Darren's neck. Mm-hmm. So something's going on with him. And then also like he's fully aware of what's going on. It's not like an accident, right? And his pal Zero is also fully aware of what's going on and seems totally fine with his friend killing people. So
yeah, and it's weird because like I was kind of wondering if maybe it was like a nervous smile, but it didn't really look like a nervous smile. It just looked like, no. Okay, you beat that guy. Here's your quarter, you know, so it's just weird. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And Virtua Fighter is a real series of games. The one in this episode is actually Virtua Fighter 2. It's the 3D version of Street Fighter. I was like, it looks like Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. And so I actually looked it up and it's the 3D version of Street Fighter.
I have played both Virtua Fighter and Street Fighter at arcades. I used to spend a lot of time at arcades.
Yeah.
So
and so. And yeah, it's a series. So like same with like Street Fighter, there's like Street Fighter 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 4, 5, 6. I don't know how far Virtua Fighter went, but at least to 2.
Very similar game mechanics. Yep.
Yeah. And then also in the shots of Jack playing the game, it's actually just like, I don't know what you officially call it, but like it's the game roll, the stuff that plays when you're not, when no one's playing, to like show you what the game is like. Because it actually shows, it has like the Zero credits flashing at the top and it's like challenger waiting the whole time he's playing. So they just like filmed the game roll and not someone actually playing the game.
That's funny. So,
which would make sense because it'd be really hard to film someone playing the game and actually have them play it, even though he dies and doesn't play it very well. But like, you know, they'd have to stand in front of the game. You have to be in front of the game to film it. So it would be hard to do that. So it makes sense. But they should have cropped it or something. So you know, so you know what I was doing.
Yeah. So then we're at the Lloyd P. Wharton County building in Connerville, Oklahoma. And we see Scully and she's wearing a lab coat and safety goggles and she's examining a body. And she says both the deceased eardrums are ruptured. She pulls his eye open and she notes that there are cataracts, probably heat induced. And Mulder's like, probably. And he picks up this evidence bag with like this blackened heart inside of it. And he says it looks like his heart was cooked right in his chest. And the coroner's in the room with him and the coroner's name is Stan. And he says he's never seen that kind of localized tissue damage. And Scully points out there are burns and scarring on the chest consistent with electrocution from high voltage and a direct current, but she doesn't see a point of contact. And Stan thinks that the lightning struck the car and then killed the kid on contact. So Scully asks if Stan found contact points on any of the other 5 victims. And Stan said he'd have to look at his notes, but it's pretty clear what killed these kids. And Mulder's like, lightning. And Stan says, yeah, as if it's completely obvious. And Scully points out that only 60 people die of lightning strikes across the country every year. So 5 in one town is statistically improbable, which Stan agrees with.
Yeah. Also, wouldn't the car show signs of lightning strike? Like, no one asked that question. But, like, I would think, like, if you're saying, like, oh, lightning probably struck the car and that's what killed him. Like, well, then the car would show evidence of a lightning strike.
Yeah. So there'd be a contact point somewhere.
Yeah. Weird. So then Sheriff Teller, who's been standing in the doorway the whole time, he like butts in and says there were only 4 deaths. And you tell Stan, like, you don't have to defend your work, man. You're doing a good job. Don't listen, you know, don't let these people get you down, kind of thing. And then he has Stan to give them a minute. So like, you know, let me talk to these people. So Stan goes into his office and then Teller introduces himself and says he just got word of the FBI investigation. So like he didn't know about it apparently. And Scully introduces herself and Teller's like, I don't care who you are. I just wonder what you're doing here. And Scully and Mulder kind of share a look. And then Mulder just kind of like walks over the body and stands over it and doesn't say anything.
No.
And Scully tells Teller that these cases resemble other clusters of deaths linked to lightning with the same inconclusive evidence. Teller asks if Scully knows anything about lightning. She's like, yes. And then Teller asks her if she's aware that lightning kills people all the time in their homes, like in the shower, while they're talking on the phone, in their kitchen. He says people have seen lightning dance on the ground like balls. Scientists will tell you when push comes to shove that they don't know what makes lightning work at all. And Scully says she didn't know that. And he's like, I know that because I have breakfast every morning with those scientists at our local diner. And Scully says like she doesn't understand, to which Teller says, well, that's clear as glass. Teller says that here in Connerville, they manufacture lightning. Down at the Lightning Observatory on Route 4, they have 100 ionized rods pointed up at the sky designed to stimulate lightning. Scully admits she didn't know that either. Teller says that's because she didn't do her homework. Scully tells him that based on her opinion as a medical doctor, the autopsies don't add up. Teller asks what, in her medical opinion, this boy died of, if not lightning. Scully looks at Mulder, nods a little bit, and she says, given lack of other explanations, she would have to confer that lightning was the probable cause of death. And Teller says, and I won't have you suggest otherwise to the boy's family or anyone else. And then he leaves. So, like, if you do have some other ideas, keep them to yourself.
Okay? Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so after he leaves, Scully turns to Mulder, and Mulder's been like super quiet the entire time Teller's been there. And she's like frustrated, and she's like, feel free to jump in anytime. And he smiles and he's like, you were doing just fine. And she still looks pretty exasperated. And she asks if he has a theory about what's going on. And he says, I just don't think it's lightning. And then he like walks out of the morgue. So real helpful, Mulder. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of just let her like get tore up a little bit.
Get pummeled a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And Teller's kind of a jerk. So, I mean.
Yeah, he is a jerk. I will grant you he is a jerk. But he does also call Scully on that I know all things that she kind of pulls every episode where she like tells people she knows stuff. And then like this one, he was like, do you know about lightning? She's like, yes. And then he like says all this stuff and she's like, oh, I didn't know that. So, you know, of course, I'm going to like that.
Yeah. I mean, she does admit that she's not like an expert.
Yeah. And then obviously when she pulls that, most of the stuff is wrong because the writers, but, you know, not her because she's not real. Movie say many times. And then also, I mean, we know they're there because it's an X-Files thing, which technically isn't official. So, I mean, yeah, he's a dick and he's probably hiding something and he might even be corrupt. We don't know. But he's also like not like completely wrong about questioning why they're there, because like technically they don't have a reason to be there. So,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Teller is played by Ernie Lively, who had recurring roles on Murder, She Wrote, Dukes of Hazzard, and The West Wing. He was on a lot of other things and he passed away in June of this year. Also, the character Teller was named after the magician from the duo Penn and Teller.
Oh.
Yeah, which I found out because of next episode where they're talking about psychics and skeptics. But anyway, yeah, that's why they named him Teller, kind of in honor of Penn and Teller. Although I don't know if it's an honor to name someone after you and then have that character be kind of a jerk. So.
Yeah. Anyway. Lloyd P. Wharton, who the courthouse is named after, is not a real person, so likely not a real building. But Connerville, Oklahoma is a real place. It is a rural, unincorporated community and a census-designated place, which means it's like not even like an actual town, basically, because it has a population of 150, according to the 2019 numbers. So it's kind of a little bit like Fairfield, Idaho in Fearful Cemetery. Like, it's a real place, but it's not representative of reality. Because like Fairfield had like a zoo and all this stuff, and like in reality, it like has like 500 people that live there. So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So Scully goes after Mulder down the hall and she asks what he's expecting to find. And Mulder again is like, I don't know yet. And so she asks him to stop and she looks him in the eye. And she's like, after everything we've just been through and seen, I really hope that you're not thinking this is in any way connected to government conspiracies or UFOs. And Mulder smiles again and he says, so far, nothing indicates either of those things. And she presses and she's like, what are you looking for? Just because a forensic profile isn't cut and dry doesn't mean that it's not correct. And Mulder asks if Teller's explanation works for her. And she says that at this point, lightning is the only scientific explanation that makes sense. And Mulder says that this lightning seems to have a definite preference for the type of person it strikes. And Scully's like, what are you talking about? And he points out that all the victims are male, ages 17 to 21, just like Jack Hammett. And Mulder at least wants to go see where Jack was killed. Maybe they can find an explanation they both agree on. And I do like that they brought up like the events of the past few episodes, because it's been 3 episodes. So like, it's a pretty big thing that they've been through. And Scully's just freaking done being chased by shadow government assassins and almost murdered and aliens running around. So she's like super over it. And I can totally get why.
Yeah. Knowing what this episode was going to be about, roughly, I was wondering, like, are they just going to like, just be like, oh, we're back at work, dun 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 dun, right, kind of thing, which they kind of do a little bit, but they do, it's nice that they get a little,
yeah, at least they get
here,
yeah, couple lines, like it's not, and I know we can like, yes, Mulder and Scully probably have had other discussions about it off screen, who knows what they've done in the office, if they've, you know, but it's just good to have it addressed on the show so we can at least acknowledge that they acknowledge that they've just been through this like huge ordeal, so we can at least jump,
yeah, them being officially reinstated probably doesn't make great television. But it also is like super abrupt for them to just like be boom, we're out on an investigation.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's good that it got mentioned.
Yeah. So Jack's car is still in the front of the arcade and it's got like big orange, like hold for tow sign on it. And it's got like tape around it so people don't like go by and touch it. And Scully is standing next to it and she's reading the report. And she says, police found Jack in his car at 17 minutes past midnight. The entire electrical system is shorted out in the car and the wiring has been melted. Mulder is bent down near a skid mark and it says it looks like he was trying to get away from there in a hurry. And then Mulder asks what time his last pizza delivery was. And Scully says between 11 and 11:30. And she's like, why? And Mulder looks around. He's like, well, this strip mall, like all the stores would have been closed by 11 o'clock. And he's like, except for maybe the arcade. Right. So maybe he was in the arcade. Mm-hmm. So they decide to go into the arcade. And inside, Zero is counting quarters into paper rolls. And Scully's like, excuse me. And he like holds up a finger because like he's counting, right? Because he's trying to get him in there. And then Mulder kind of wanders off into the arcade to look around. And then when Zero finishes, she asks him his name and if she can talk to him for a minute. And he asks what for. And she's like, well, I'm FBI. And he's like, oh, all right. So Scully asks him if Zero was working last night. And he's like, yeah, every night. And so she shows him a photo of Jack and asks if he recognizes him. And Zerober's like, no, I don't know. And Scully's like, well, take a closer look. And then she tells him that Jack was at the arcade between 11 and 11:30. And he was killed in the parking lot in that car, and like points to the window. And like, you can see the car like with tape around it, like right from like his point of view. Right. So it's like, you didn't know there wasn't a car there that someone died. And then he's like, oh, that was him. So like suddenly like ding, yeah. Lights go on. So
yeah, he feigns recognition. He's like, oh, that dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
The time Scully gives for him being in the arcade is like the window of his last delivery. So actually like he probably would have arrived between 11 and midnight, but that's me being like pedantic and like nitpicking.
Coming around.
Well, and he could have arrived between 11 and 11:30. Maybe his last delivery ended at like 11:05. Like, we don't know, but it just seems like if I were Scully, I would have said between 11 and midnight because you don't really know. I don't know if that's script error or if it's just because he would have been there at the time.
Yeah. And she they also gave those times like just like a few seconds ago.
Right.
Like when was his pizza delivery? So maybe she just got confused because she was just remembering those numbers.
Yeah, I don't know. And she obviously doesn't buy Zero's act either. And it's pretty clear, like when he feigns recognition, like it's pretty clear that he was lying about it. So
I mean, if she did not realize what was going on with him, like she would have not even like passed his kindergarten entry exam because like he's not great at like even before the whole like, oh, like you could tell like this dude is super nervous and
yeah
doesn't want to say anything bad. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And Jack Black's acting is great, but the character's acting is not good.
No. Yeah. Ooh, so meta.
Yeah.
He's such a good actor that looks like he's bad at acting. Wow. Well,
the character is supposed to be bad at acting, I think. So Mulder continues his walk around and he reaches the Virtua Fighter 2 machine. And he sees that the high scores are all somebody called DPO. And Zero walks Scully over to the machine where Mulder is standing. And he tells her that when he last saw Jack, he had fed a bunch of quarters into this machine. And then an ambulance showed up, so he wasn't really paying attention in between. And Scully asks if he noticed anything unusual before the ambulance arrived. And Zero's like, oh, well, you know, it's hard to tell. The arcade gets pretty loud. You know, I don't know what's going on. And Scully asks if he noticed anyone else around who might have seen something. And Zero's like, I don't really remember. So he's like super not helpful.
Yeah. And super sketchy.
Yeah. Sketchy. Sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. When we started talking about this episode, like on our own, I was like, cause like DPO, right? It's like I think you had asked me at one point, like if I knew what DPO stood for, and I was like, I don't know, but I got a game. And so, I mean, you came up with way better ones than I did. I came up with like dead people only and depressed people only. I couldn't get away from the only part or the people part, apparently.
Yeah.
You came up with some pretty good ones though.
Yeah. I came up with like dire pirate octopuses or don't panic. Oops. Or Dreamy Paradise Oahu, or Dorky People Only, which I stole from you, or like Dank Putrid Odor. Mm-mm. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I didn't know what DPO referred to. And when I realized it was initials of a guy on a video game, I was kind of disappointed, to be honest. I was like, oh, could have been a lot of things. But, you know, at least it wasn't like Blood, where it was like, this is definitely vampires. And then it's not. It was just like, I don't know what that could be. And then I was like, oh. Yeah,
I mean, I guess it's okay. Close to Dwayne Barry, but like one step removed, sort of. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Mulder points at the console screen and says, like, take a look at this. And while he does that, like, Zero is just like, like faded away out of the scene, like just backed up and disappeared. And he's like, what's the names of the victims? And so Scully starts reading them off of the report. And she's like, Darren Oswald. And Mulder's like, what's Darren's middle name? And she's like, Peter. Why? And Mulder points to the high scores. And of course, they are all DPO, Darren Peter Oswald. So he's like, of the five victims, he was the only one to survive, correct? Scully confirms this. And Mulder's like, well, and he points to the games and they all have date and timestamps. Which I don't remember the timestamps. I do remember the dates. I don't remember timestamps. But anyway, it shows that he was definitely there last night. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
So then we see Darren and he's working as a mechanic at a garage. So he's like under a car with his headphones. And as he's working on the car, he sees someone walk in and he just kind of sees their legs and then like the skirt and heels. So he slides out from under the car, right as the woman, Sharon, kind of reaches where he's at. And Sharon kind of startles and she's like, oh, you scared me. And he takes off his headphones and she's like, where is Frank? And Darren's like, oh, he's out on a tow. But then he's like, can I help you with anything? And she's like, no, Frank and I are supposed to go to dinner. And Darren's like, well, I can get you something to eat. We have day-old jelly donuts. They taste pretty good still. And look, I love a day-old jelly donut too. But this woman's here to go to dinner with her husband. She doesn't want your old donut.
Yeah, and you just came out from under the car basically to look up her skirt. So,
so she's like, no, thank you. And she kind of walks away. And Darren starts to apologize about things he said yesterday. We don't really get to find out what those were. But then Frank pulls in his tow truck. So Darren kind of backs off. And Frank tells Sharon that he's sorry he's late. He had to go tow that poor pizza guy's car. And Frank then tells Darren that he got a call on the radio and the FBI are coming to talk to him.
Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh. Yeah.
So then we cut and we see that Darren is holding Jack's photo. And he's saying like, oh, so that's the dude that died, huh? And Mulder and Scully are there. Obviously, they gave him the photo. And he asks how it happened. And Mulder says he was struck by lightning. Darren kind of laughs and is like, yeah, that happens. And Mulder points out that it happened on a clear night outside the video arcade. And he knows Darren was there and that he broke his record, too. And Darren, like the fact that he like acknowledges like Darren broke his record, Darren kind of like, he starts kind of warming up. He's going like, yeah, yeah, I did put my record, right? Oh, you're a cool dude. You know about my video game. And so Mulder says, like, he must have seen something. And Darren's like, no. When he gets into his game, it's like he is there, right? Like, he is on point. Like, he says a nuclear explosion go off, and he wouldn't notice because he is just focused when he's playing. And then Mulder asks Darren if he considers himself a lucky person. And Darren's like, me? I don't think so. And Mulder's like, well, of all the people who've got struck by lightning recently in this town, you're the only one who survived. And then Darren is like, oh, yeah. I guess if you kind of look at it like that, then yeah, I guess you could consider me lucky. And Scully kind of like notices something and she like kind of gets up and she's like, Mulder, what's in your pocket? And we see that something is smoking inside of Mulder's suit pocket, right? In his coat. And he pulls it out and it's his cell phone. And Scully's like, what happened? He's like, I don't know. And then it's so hot that he drops it. And then we see it fall on the ground. And like part of the screen like starts to melt, or like something is oozing out of it or something, right? Something's going on with his phone. Like it's smoking and there's like liquid coming out of it. And Darren's like, bummer. And then he like excuses himself, says, I'm going to go, and then leaves. And Mulder's like, yeah, thanks for your help. So,
yeah. Then it's nighttime at a farmhouse. And inside there's a woman and she's watching a talk show where a guy with a lot of tattoos, I think he's talking about BDSM. It's like one of those talk shows where they bring up topics and then, you know, everyone argues and fights and the audience is like,
yeah, I think it's just S&M because I don't think they were using that BDSM.
Oh, that might be then. It. Yeah.
But yeah, it's similar. Yeah. Cause then he's talking about it's the corset he wears and all that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah. So anyway, he's doing his thing and she's watching and then the channel changes to MTV and it's like playing a music video. And the woman turns around and she sees Darren, who's behind her, and she's like, stop messing with the remote. And then she digs the remote out of her chair cushion and she turns it back. And Darren says, the people on the talk show are all a bunch of losers. And the woman's like, well, they're on TV. I don't see you on TV. And Darren burps super loud. And the woman's like, manners are free and no girl's going to want to belcher. And Darren says, maybe she'd be surprised. And then someone knocks at the door and we hear someone calling Darren's name. So he kind of looks at the TV in like a sinister way. And then it turns to snow and the woman clicks the remote, but she can't get the picture back. And Darren goes to the door and it's Zero. And they go outside and Zero's like, you'll never guess who came by today. And Darren's like, the FBI, they came to see him too. And Zero's like, well, how'd they find you? And Darren's like, you must've said something. And Zero like insists that he didn't. And while they're talking, Darren climbs this hill and there's like, they're in this field with a bunch of cows and there's like this hill in the field. So he like climbs up to the top of that and Zero chases. And he's basically like, Darren, I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't tell on you, that kind of thing. And Darren's like, you should be somewhere else tonight because I'm in the mood for a little barbecue. And Zero's like, not the cows again. And Darren yells up at the sky that he's ready. And so like, he starts yelling and Zero's like begging him not to do it. And Darren's like, come on down to the sky, like calling the lightning, I guess. And so Zero runs and he like rolls down the hill and Darren keeps yelling at the sky and lightning strikes and it hits Darren. And then these two bolts bounce back up to the sky from him and Zero sees smoke up on top of the hill. So then he runs up on the hill to check on Darren and he asks like, are you okay? And Darren seems out of it at first, but then he kind of like gets up and is like, excellent. So.
Yeah. And then it's commercial.
It's like the worst version of Bill and Ted.
Yeah. I was going to say, it seemed like they were trying to pull a little Bill and Ted with that one.
Yeah.
Basically, because like he's wearing like his hat backwards and all that kind of stuff during the scene. So he's kind of getting that little like Bill S. Preston Esquire vibe going on a little bit. But yeah. Yeah. But commercial, he didn't die. We're going to find out in the next scene that a bunch of cows died. So Zero is like, no, not the cows. But like he has no problem with the fact that you like are killing people in the town. Like possibly like at least four people, like, but no, not the cows, dude. So I don't know. That's weird. I mean, in a way I kind of get it because people aren't usually the best, but also it just seems weird that like, you know, you don't have any problem with the fact that you just killed some dude yesterday because he was playing your video game, but like not the cows, man. So yeah.
Also, wouldn't you get sick of playing the same video game if you keep beating your record? I don't know.
Well, we'll talk about this later. I mean, I'm not sure if Darren, to use a phrase, Darren is not right in the head.
No, he's not.
And I was not sure if that was something because he got struck by lightning or if that was something before. We'll find out it was something that was before as well. Mm-hmm. Like he's not, you know, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer kind of action. So yeah. So maybe, you know, I don't know. Also, if you get struck by lightning, your brain probably doesn't work great.
Right. Well, they he is a little bit coded, like he's on the autism spectrum in some way. And so maybe that like repetitive, like I'm going to play the same game and hyperfixate on things. Not that I do that at all, but like as I hyperfixate, I won't even say the show, but you know, so I get the hyperfixation thing. I don't think it's that weird. So I wonder if that's part of it as well.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But also it's TV.
So. Yeah.
So the next day, we are in that field up on the mountain, and Sheriff Teller is there, and there's some men who are removing a dead cow. Like, at first I was like, oh dude, the cow is totally moving. And then I realized it was moving because they were dragging it up onto the, like, basically like a tow truck for cows, basically like a flatbed truck. I do wonder, because there are several cows laying around in the field. Like, I'm those are not props. If they are, they are the best props I've ever seen in my entire life.
They're real cows, and we'll talk about this at the end. The guy who owns the farmhouse let them use their cows.
I know, but did they drug them? Like, the cows are not moving.
Oh, they're just, cows do that. They just lay down and hang out.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Even when you're dragging them?
Oh, not when you're being dragged. No,
that didn't move. Like, that cow, like, his tongue was hanging out, and they were dragging it.
I think the dead cows are, like, props. I don't think they're real.
Oh, I don't know. They look really good, then. I'll give them props for the props, because those look freaking really good.
Yeah, I don't think the dead cows are real.
No, there's like at least like two or three other cows like laying on the ground that just are. You can tell they're not fake. They are cows. Huh. So yeah, I don't know about the real one, or the, I don't know about the one that's being moved. But I was like, did they just happen to come across someone who like has some dead cows? It was weird. Anyway, I was a little disturbed by the scene, just kind of thinking like the logistics of it, like what is really going on here. Anyway, get back to the show. Get back to fiction, Nick, not reality. Okay, so Mulder and Scully arrive, and Scully's like, what happened here? And Taylor's like, three dead cows. And he asks them to guess how they died. Mulder's like, lightning. And Taylor says he just got off the phone with Dean at the observatory. And Scully asks if they detected lightning last night. And Taylor says that they can detect lightning anywhere on the planet, which technically isn't an answer. But anyway, he says that each strike emits radio waves with the exact same frequency. And Mulder's like, yes, that's the Schumann resonance, 8 cycles per second. And you can pick it up with any transistor radio. And then he jokes, see, I did my homework. I neglected to look that up. I was planning to look that up. And then we had to do something else earlier today. And I forgot. So yeah. I don't know if the Schumann resonance is right or if it is 8 cycles per second. Actually, I think it's 8 like megahertz kind of thing. I don't know. But anyway, I did see the number and I'm not sure that it's exactly right, but it's close enough. It's TV. We'll let it go. So then Mulder bends down near a dead cow and Teller tells him that there's no question lightning killed these cows and Jack Hammond the night before. And Mulder agrees that's the way it looks. And Teller says he wants to show them something else. And he brings them over to this mound of something and some dirt. And he asks if they know what it is. And Mulder says, yes, it's fulgurite. It happens when sandy soil fuses into glass from the heat of a lightning discharge. And Teller says that their business here is finished, because obviously that's more proof lightning, right?
Right.
And so he walks away. So Scully says she thinks he's right. And Mulder's like, so we're wasting our time chasing lightning? And Scully says, look at the evidence. What else could it be? And Mulder's like, I don't know yet, but... And so he like pulls the fulgurite out of the ground and he shows Scully. He's like, this is the first time I've seen a fulgurite with a footprint in it. And there's a footprint in it. Yep.
Evidence. Mm-hmm. Ooh. So then we're at the forensic lab at the Johnston County Sheriff's Office, and Scully pulls plaster from the print on the fulgurite, and she looks at the print on the plaster and says, here we go. And it's a partial imprint, but there is a lot of information on it. It looks like a standard military boot, size 8.5. And Mulder's like, wow, that's impressive. And she's like, yeah, it says the size on the sole. So she didn't just guess that. It actually says it on the imprint. And she found something else. There's like a viscous substance trapped in the fulgurite that she thinks is antifreeze. And Mulder makes the connection to Darren Oswald because he works in a garage. And I think Darren's kind of his only suspect anyway. And he was acting sort of weird. So Scully's like, but why and how? And Mulder doesn't know, but he wants to go see if the shoe fits.
Dun, dun, dun.
He's going to get a glass slipper and send his guards around everyone's house and make everyone try it on.
Well, hopefully they're not like cutting off their heels trying to get into this thing.
Oh, so, I don't know if you'd want to.
I mean, maybe. You don't know. 8.5 is pretty small. Well, I don't know. I might not be the best gauge of that. 8.5 seems pretty small for a young man's shoe, but I wear 14, so
yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a big difference.
Yeah. And so Johnson County is also a real place in Oklahoma. And, my quick Google search just now, as Tori was talking, it looks like Connerville is in Johnson County. Woo! All right, X-Files. Right. Good job.
Yay.
Google Max is actually being kind of weird at the moment, so I might be wrong. If I am, well, then it's not my fault. So then we are at County Road A7, and there's an intersection with a stoplight. It's one of those ones that, like, it's hanging, like, from the wire right above the actual, like, intersection of the road, and it's got, you know, three lights on every side, green, yellow, red. And two cars are speeding through it, and they almost collide. And the drivers, like, yell at each other, "Hey, where did you go? You think you're on the road?" And we see Darren, he's seated up on the edge of a billboard, like, at the intersection, and he's just laughing because the crash almost happened. So we get that he is actually making the lights change with his powers. Mm-hmm. And so Zero climbs up and is like, "Dude, what's happening?" And Zero has a six-pack of beer, and he sits down next to Darren. And then we see two more cars almost hit, and Darren's like, "Oh, damn, ABS brakes." And Zero says they should go somewhere. Like, maybe they should go to Las Vegas. He's like, "You could do a lot of damage in a place like Vegas," which is like, so is that, you guys just want to, like, mess stuff up? That's your whole goal, just to do weird?
It seems like it. I mean, you could also probably win a lot of money on slot machines if you had Darren.
Yeah, but he's like, maybe that's the kind of damage. Like, you could do damage, like monetary damage, like a casino. But it seems like he's just like, you could blow stuff up. They have a lot of lights.
Yeah. I don't
know what's going on? Yeah, it's kind of vague what he means. It is. And Darren, like, shakes his head and he's like, "I'm not going anywhere. Not without Mrs. Cavott." And Mrs. Cavott is Sharon. He actually calls her that at one point in the garage. So Frank's wife is Mrs. Cavott, Frank Cavott. And Zero's like, "What makes you think she'd want to go anywhere with you?" He's like, "She failed you, dude. Remember? She thinks you're not super smart." And he uses a word that we're not going to say on the podcast. And then Darren's like, "Forget school. I'm thinking about how I'm going to prove my love." And Zero's like, "How are you going to do that?" And Darren says, "By letting her know how he feels and how all he thinks about is being with her." And Zero points out, "There's another problem. She's married to your boss." And Darren's like, "Let me back fry him." Zero's like, "Dude, he's your boss." And Darren's like, "Not if he's dead."
Oh, man. Just dumbass teenagers.
And Zero's like, "Dude, you can't compete with somebody like Frank. He's good looking. He has his own shop. He fixes stuff instead of just breaking things. It's like a woman like Mrs. Cavott wants someone special." And Darren's like, "I'm special." And then we see two cars go through the intersection, and then boom, they have, like, hit. Like, one dude just, like, totally T-bones the other car. Boom. Like a truck and a car. Darren laughs, and he's like, "Come on, man, that was a good one. Let's go down and check it out." Zero is like, "I might need to rethink my friendship choices."
I mean, yeah, now at this point, after he killed four people, and clearly does this car crashing thing often enough that you would bring beer to go hang out and sit.
And just casually is like, "I could kill my boss and get his wife." And he's like, "No, dude, you shouldn't do that. She wants someone special. Not the fact that, like, you shouldn't kill him, but, like, she's not going to like you even if you do kill him. So don't worry about it." Like,
not that you shouldn't kill him, but, like, he's your boss, man. Come on.
Who's going to pay you if you kill your boss?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So then back at the farmhouse, Mulder and Scully are talking to Mrs. Oswald, Darren's mom, who says that, like, she says a lot of disparaging things about her son, but then she's like, "But I'm sure he wouldn't hurt a fly." And I'm like, I don't know if you're the best judge of things, but
yeah,
she lets them into Darren's room so they can look around. And so Mulder sits on his bed and immediately zeroes in on a girly mag because it's on the nightstand,
which he turns sideways to look at. Yes.
Oh yeah. He's got to look at the centerfold. He's got to check it out. And Scully finds one of Darren's shoes in the closet. And she tells Mulder that Darren does in fact wear an 8.5, but it still doesn't prove that he killed Jack Hammett. And she sees Mulder looking through the Crowley magazine and she's like, "I figured you'd probably already read that issue." And he's like, "I have. April is the cruelest month." And then he hands her a photo that was wedged between two pages of the magazine. And they realize this photo that was in the magazine has been cut out of a yearbook because, like, based on the text in the back, it's got some information about a club or something. And so Scully grabs the yearbook out of Darren's closet and they find where the photo was cut from. And they realize it's Sharon Cavett. And Mulder's like, "Isn't the garage where Darren works Cavett Auto Body?" So they make that connection. Pretty,
yeah. That was a great, I love that scene.
It was
although, good scene. I have to say, especially in that room, dude, you guys need to be wearing gloves. That's so gross. Gross.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just a whole girly magazine and a photo tucked in the pages. Yeah. I went,
oh, yeah. I mean, Darren is not the most hygienic young man.
Yeah. I will say, as someone who, I think most people know this, like, depending on the brand of any type of clothing, including shoes, like, sizes won't always match.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the fact that, like, she holds up like a Converse and says he wears 8.5, but yet the other one is supposed to be him. So, I mean, like, again, it's TV, right? But, like, it might not have been, like, it could have easily been like a 9 or an 8 that she held up and be like, oh, it's the wrong size.
Well, I'm like, I always buy the same, basically the same shoe. I buy Skechers all the time. Like, and when I wear them out, I buy new ones. And, like, even my sizes change. It's like they just change the size somehow, or it's my feet change or something.
I mean, do you buy the exact same style every time, or
no? And so different styles. And
so that could be it too. Yeah, because I know I vary a little bit with I'm a Doc Martens dude, and so I'm pretty standard 14 on those US or 14, but I have worn, like, I'm trying to remember if Doc Martens does. It's been a long time since I got something that wasn't a 14, but I think that for a while, depending on which style of Doc Martin I bought, I would basically have to buy it, like, because I would buy them online, because I'm not going into a store. Even before the pandemic, I was not a store person. I would buy them online and then have to like order one size, and if it didn't fit, then send it back and get, like, the, you know, the bigger size or the smaller size. So there was some, like, difference there too. I don't remember if they did half sizes at my size though. I think we stopped doing half sizes once you get to a certain number.
Doc Martens, you have to, like, fit your ankle and your leg and stuff too, so, like, the foot size might be right, but then,
well, most of my Docs I usually wear the Oxford style a lot. I don't wear a lot of the actual boots. I wear more like the shoes. So anyway, people don't need to know all that stuff, but they do now.
Shoe corner
with Nick and Tori. Stand in the corner with Shoe Corner with Nick and Tori. Anyway. So Frank Cavatt pulls his tow truck up to the intersection where the accident just happened that they were watching, right? And he asks the cop directing traffic, like, what happened? And while they're talking, he starts, like, holding his shoulder, like he's not feeling great. And he's kind of like, oh, like something's going on. And he asks if they're ready for him to clear the cars. And the cop says that he has to check with the captain first. And then he kind of, like, looks at Frank, and Frank is not, like, he's got some distress on his face and he's holding his shoulder and he's like, are you okay, man? And then Frank is kind of like, yeah. And he's obviously not okay. And then Frank looks off, like, behind the cop, and he sees Darren standing with a bunch of onlookers. Darren is just, like, hardcore, like, just staring at him. And then the pain worsens and he collapses, and the cops grab him and they're like, hey, get over here. And they, like, help him on the ground. So the EMTs run over, and one of them is like, his pulse is thready. And so we're like, go get the kit. So the other EMT runs over to get the defibrillator, and the other one, like, checking his heart and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Darren starts walking closer to an intersection, and Zero's like, dude, stop. Like, we need to get out of here. But, like, you can't stop him. Darren just keeps going. So the other EMT comes back with the defibrillator, and they get to go use it, but, like, it's dead. There's no power. And he's like, go get the backup. So the dude runs off to get the other one, because they keep a backup. Smart. Mulder and Scully could learn something about having backups. And then Darren comes, and he stands over Frank. And Frank kind of looks up and sees him, and Darren's like, don't worry, I've seen how they do it on TV. And he kneels down and he puts his hands on Frank's chest, and then boom, just like a defibrillator, right? And then the monitor starts beeping, indicating his heart's going, and the EMTs are confused. And Darren smirks and is like, rescue 911. So, and then it's commercial.
I mean, look, I'm not an expert at having superpowers because I don't have any, but I'm guessing that if you want your superpowers to remain secret, part of the key is not to use them in front of a bunch of witnesses.
Yeah, especially like law enforcement.
Yeah.
And medical people. But then again, if your power is apparently just like all the electricity,
yeah,
then, you know, if they come after you, it's not a problem. So
I guess not.
Yeah.
So then we're at the Felton County Hospital in Felton, Oklahoma, and we see Sharon Cavatt, and she's trying to fill a glass of water from one of those, like, water tanks, you know, where you get the big bottle that you have to change out. And she's trying to fill the cup, but she's, like, shaking and hesitant, and the cup falls out of her hand and hits the floor. So Mulder rushes over and gives her a hand, and he, like, fills a cup for her. And then he introduces himself, and he's like, I'd really like to ask you some questions. And she notes that Mulder was at her husband's garage yesterday. And he tries to ask her about Darren Oswald, but she like pushes past him and she's like, I need to see my husband. And she goes into Frank's room.
Yeah. So we go to a different county for the hospital. We're in Felton County, which quick Google search doesn't exist. So that one is not real. So then Scully comes up and tells Mulder that she spoke with one of the EMTs and he was pretty rattled. And she shows Mulder a printout of the tape that shows Frank echocardiogram. And there's a spike on it that shows when something electrical restarted his heart. Except according to the EMT, the defibrillator wouldn't charge. They couldn't use it. And she says the EMT can't explain it. And that he only saw Darren Oswald touching Frank's chest.
Yep.
Suspicious. So Mulder brings Scully over to the nurse's station where he has Darren's file from when he was struck by lightning. I think it was like 5 months ago. And she reads over the report and she notices something odd, surprise, surprise, that his blood work showed acute hypokalemia. And Mulder's like, what's that? And she says it's a chemical imbalance caused by high sodium and low potassium levels. And Mulder realizes she's talking about electrolytes and asks what they do. Why would he know about them if he didn't know what they do? Anyway, okay.
Because they need Scully to explain it to the audience.
I'm just going to say Mulder says she's talking about electrolytes and then Scully explains the other part.
Oh, so you want to leave out the part where Mulder's the one asking stupid questions.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right. All right. I'll allow it. That's a grantable basis. Okay. So Mulder realizes she's talking about electrolytes and then he asks what they do, which I'm not sure why he knows about them. He doesn't know what they do. But anyway, so then Scully explains they generate electrical impulses in our bodies. So Mulder got to ask the dumb question this time.
Yay.
So, yay. But I mean, again, it's part of Scully doing exposition, right? So
yeah.
So it controls like heartbeats, neurons firing. I don't know about that last one. But anyway, Mulder posits that maybe Darren's imbalance is allowing him to generate electricity levels much higher than normal. And Scully's like, yeah, it doesn't work like that. Okay. Does not work like that. And Mulder's like, unless his body is unusually conductive, then it would work like that. And that if the heel print they found is Oswald's, that means he conducted millions of volts of electricity and then just walked away. And so Scully is like, are you saying Darren is a lightning rod? And Mulder's like, no, he is lightning. And they have to get him before he strikes again. Don't drink too much Gatorade, kids.
Which is, it's a good line. Well, and this is also why, like, if you take medication regularly, generally you have to do regular blood work. Because they have to check your, like, electrolytes, depending on what the medication is. But they have to make sure that, like, your stuff is balanced, because if it goes out of balance, it can cause all kinds of problems with your heart.
I am interested in, I did not look this up. I looked it up to figure out how to say it, but I didn't look it up. But because it's like high sodium, but low potassium. But then potassium is also a kind of salt. And so it's like two different salts out of balance. And so, I mean, it's kind of like, in a way, that's sort of like how batteries work a little bit.
Yeah.
And your body
works. It can happen, because if you have high blood pressure, a lot of times you take medication to lower your blood pressure and the medication leaches the potassium out of your body. And so then, but if your blood pressure stays high, you could still have high, or like if you eat a lot of salt and you don't balance out the sodium, you could have high sodium with low potassium. Yeah. So it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. And I know it can also cause, I mean, it causes other physical problems too. I know it can also cause neurological, like confusion, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that's related to like the neuron firing. I think that's more of like the chemical imbalance in the brain and like it affects the blood flow or something, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm not entirely sure either. I know that, like, I'm pretty sure that no matter what your electrolyte balance is, you probably can't shoot lightning at people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure that that it would allow you to become a generator. Yeah. So, but hey, who knows, man? That's why it's an X-File.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird. So Mulder and Scully arrive back at Darren's house and they see him walking in a field and he's got like this beer in his hand. And when he sees them, he like speeds up. So he doesn't run, but he definitely like increases his speed and tries to get away from them. And Mulder calls his name and he ignores them. And so Mulder reaches out and grabs his shoulder and Darren shakes him off and yells. And he's like, don't touch me. And Scully's like, we just want to ask you a few more questions. And Darren's like, I didn't do anything. And then we cut to the Johnston County Jail.
Yep. Darren's in there.
And Darren's in the interrogation room with Scully. And he's like, I don't know how those people died. And Scully's like, why did you run when you saw us? And Darren insists that he was just taking a walk. Anyway, they should give him a medal. After all, he saved Frank Cravath's life. And Scully's like, we're not so sure about that. And Darren's like, who told you that? Have you been talking to Zero? And Scully leaves the room. So Darren is suspicious of Zero, man. He really doesn't trust that guy. Mm-hmm. That guy's keeping your secret this whole time. Like, you really think, anyway.
Well, he's the one who knows the secret, right? So if, you know, Darren obviously is not able to, like, go into other minds and be like, oh, they might just find, like, all the stuff I've done that's super suspicious and put clues together. It's got to be the one person who knows my secret telling them.
Not the FBI. I'm too smart for the FBI to figure this out. Yeah,
it's not that I'm not smart and just keep doing things in front of people that I shouldn't be doing.
Right.
So, yeah. So outside, Mulder's like, what did he say? And Scully says, not much, except that he's a hero. And she says that Darren claims he revived Frank with CPR, which Mulder's like, yeah, no, that did not happen. And he wants to do a full lab workup on Darren. And Scully's like, we don't have the local facilities to do that. And we also don't have the time to do that because we can only hold him for 72 hours unless he confesses. And so Mulder says, well, then we should go to the only other person who can help us.
Yeah.
So then Mulder and Scully arrive at the Cravath house and Sharon opens the door and she doesn't want to talk to them because she's just leaving to go to the hospital. But Mulder tells her that Darren is in custody, but they can't press criminal charges without her help. And Scully asks if they can come in. And she reluctantly opens the door wider and lets them in. And I figured they were going to go talk to Zero because Darren basically told Scully, like, who to go talk to and who knows stuff. But they didn't know, they didn't do that.
Well, so, to be fair, Zero has not been helpful so far.
No, but they also realize that he's not great at keeping secrets. You know,
yeah.
That he would probably be easy to, you know.
To read, yeah.
Yeah.
So then they're in the living room and Sharon tells them that she teaches remedial reading at the high school and Darren was her student. She knew Darren had a crush on her, but she felt sorry for the kid. He seemed to have more than his share of bad luck. And so Scully asks him if she got him the job at Frank's garage and Sharon says yes. But then about 6 months ago, she started getting these hang-up calls. And she knew it was Darren because of how he looked at her in the garage. Those hang-up calls made her feel the same way. Which we can tell is not a good way.
Yeah. And that answers the question. Not that lightning strike probably helped anything, but he apparently got struck by lightning like about 5 months ago. She says the phone call started about 6 months ago. So that may have maybe, you know, he lost some restraint kind of thing that happens a lot with people have brain damage that they lose like control, impulse control and that kind of stuff. So that could explain some stuff too. So.
For sure. For sure. So Mulder asks when she first suspected that Darren was involved in more than just prank calls. And Sharon's like, he told me. And Mulder's surprised. And he's like, he confessed to the murders? And Sharon's like, no. But he told her that he had powers right after Jack Hammond was killed. So that's the thing where he was like starting to apologize for the stuff that he said when Frank came in. That was probably what he was apologizing
for. Yeah, except for he's like, the stuff I said yesterday and... Jack Hammond was killed like at midnight, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
Have 2 days passed? I mean, that would
maybe.
I don't think so.
Well, because they did have his body, right? So yeah, I don't know.
The car was still there too. Would the car still be there for 2 days?
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so basically, he told her he had powers, and Sharon thought he was just mouthing off. But after what happened today with Frank, she's not so sure. And Mulder asked if she told anyone, and she's like, who would have believed me? And she was also afraid of what Darren might do to her or her husband. And Scully's like, well, you don't have to be afraid anymore. With your testimony, we can keep Darren locked up. So Sharon Cravath is played by Kate Robbins. She will actually appear in one more episode of The X-Files, and she'll be in 2 episodes of Millennium. And she actually did several voices for My Little Pony Tales, which was a cartoon that I probably watched as a kid. And she's also appeared on The Dead Zone, The Outer Limits, and Smallville. So she's been on some things.
Yeah. And she's got a birdie. So
yeah.
Yeah. Back at the jail, they open the door to the interrogation room, and Darren is not there. He's gone. And Teller comes out And Mulder's like, where's Darren? And Teller's like, I sent him home. I read your vest report and it's baloney. So Mulder runs to call and warn Sharon, and Teller like reads the report and is like, suspicion of homicide via direct electric current. And he asks Scully if she really believes this. And she says she believes Darren is involved in the deaths of four people, and it was irresponsible of Teller to let him go. And Teller's like, so what? The kid is throwing lightning bolts? And Scully says, in effect, yes. And Teller says that they have no evidence or scientific proof. And she reminds him that he himself said even science can't explain how lightning works. Ooh, throwing it back. Ooh.
Yep. Yep.
And Mulder comes back and says Sharon isn't home. Scully's like, she's on her way to the hospital. And so they both run out. And then we do get a shot of Teller going like, maybe I didn't do a good thing. But
yeah, he does have that moment of doubt where you're like, he's not totally just some corrupt asshole. Maybe he did just think that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we rag on people who, like, make fun of Mulder and, you know, people he works with and stuff, which, you know, they're jerks. But like Teller, like you said, really does have this like perspective where if you really look at it from his angle, the FBI has come in. This town is near a lightning observatory. It doesn't seem that weird to him that that many people would die from lightning strikes.
Yeah. And if anything, I'd be like, maybe you should move your town.
Yeah, maybe.
Or you shouldn't have built like a lightning observatory that creates lightning right near a town. That might be a bad idea. But
yeah. But either way, like, he definitely thinks. And then the FBI guy like arrests somebody, and his report is like homicide by electrical current. And, you know, he's probably like, this is nonsense. And then after the scene, he's probably like, oh, maybe it's not some nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, whoops. Yeah. I mean, maybe you would, maybe, I mean, I guess it is your, I don't know how jurisdiction works and that kind of stuff, but it seems like he would maybe want to confer before he did, be like, you know, you could have like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to ask a few questions before you let a suspect go, but yeah.
Yeah. And I joke, I mean, I didn't necessarily joke, but like I did comment like, you know, maybe he's corrupt. Maybe he's like hiding something. I mean, that's just kind of a thing that tends to happen a lot. It doesn't seem like that's actually going on here, but you never know. Right.
So, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So then we're at the arcade and the close sign is on the door and Zero's turning off the power. So he's like closing down for the night and all the lights in the machines turn off except one. And so you can kind of see this blue light behind him and he hears the music. And so he walks down the row of games and he sees that the game that's on is Virtua Fighter 2. And Zero looks around and he doesn't see Darren, but then the jukebox comes on. Not good. So Zero kind of calls out nervously and he's like, Darren, where you at, man? What's going on? And then he like is like, okay, I'm getting out of here. And so he goes to the arcade door and it's locked. So he like fumbles with his keys and then he starts screaming like to Darren that he didn't tell them. He didn't tell them anything. And then he finally gets the door open and in the parking lot, the music is still loud and the wind is blowing. And Zero's like, why are you doing this, man? I swear I didn't say anything. We're buddies. And lightning strikes Zero in the back. And he falls over and a bunch of quarters spill from his pockets onto the pavement. And we can see that Darren is on the roof of the arcade.
Yep.
Looking down at his friend who he just brutally murdered.
Yeah. And he had a lot of quarters.
Yeah.
He had a lot of quarters on him.
Maybe he hadn't put them in.
I guess I'm guessing they were like in his little waist thing that he was wearing.
Right, where you like hand out quarters for change for people. Yeah. So you're making change. So, yeah.
Maybe he wasn't planning on leaving right then, right? But then he's like, I'm not sure why you would think that maybe I should go outside when my friend can like control lightning, but
yeah. Yeah.
Also, cool. You're in a room full of electronics too. So I guess there's no good choice, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so we get a commercial where someone actually dies because we had cows die on the first commercial break. But no people. Mm-hmm. And then we actually had someone come back to life in the second commercial break.
Oh, yeah.
And then now we've actually got someone dying for a commercial break. So everything is right with the universe. And then we are at Felton Community Hospital in Felton, Oklahoma. So... again, not real. And Mulder and Scully arrive on Frank's floor, the fourth floor. And his room is 404, in case you're interested. Anyway, Mulder flashes his badge at a nurse and tells her to call security and have them deny entry to anyone but emergency personnel. And they go into Frank's room, and both he and Sharon are there. Well, of course he's there, right? Sharon's there. And Scully opens the door and tells Sharon to come over. So they tell her that Darren was released from custody. And Sharon is like, you told me we were safe. Well, like, how did that happen? She's understandably upset. Mm-hmm. And Scully's like, you got to come with me. And she's like, no, I'm not leaving. Like, Frank can't be moved. I'm not leaving my husband. And then the lights flicker and go off and the emergency lights come on. And Mulder's like, he's here. Pulls out his gun.
Ooh, sinister.
Yep. So then both Mulder and Scully head over to the elevator because the elevator is dinging. And they both like have their guns. They're like ready. They're not messing around. And the door opens and it's Zero. He's inside, slumped on the floor. Scully goes in, takes his pulse. He's dead, of course. And then Mulder asks the nurse about any entry points on this floor. And she tells him that other than the elevator, there's just the stairs. So Mulder tells Scully to stay with the Kvatts and he's going after Darren. So heading downstairs. So yeah. He heads downstairs with his gun drawn. He hears something. And he turns a corner, but it's just like a fuse box and it's just torn apart.
Yeah.
Not good.
No.
Sparking.
And then we see that Darren is on the fourth floor and he pulls back the curtain to the room Frank should be in and calls Miss Kvatt, but Scully has her gun on him. And so she's like, don't move. And he keeps walking toward her and she just backs up. And then, you know, she's like, you know, stay back. And he keeps coming towards her. And then Sharon appears behind Scully. And Darren tries to step towards her, but Scully like cocks her gun. And she gives him a warning and he stops, but he extends a hand and he urges Sharon to come with him. He has stuff he needs to tell her. And Scully tells Darren to step back and he's like, I can hurt you. And she's like, I can hurt you too. I'm giving you 3 seconds. And she starts to count. So I am getting Scully a throw pillow that says, it's okay to shoot first if the bad guy is walking towards you and refusing to stop. Because yeah. I feel like this has gotten her in a lot of trouble. And like, just, I mean, I understand not wanting to fire your weapon, but dude, like at some point.
Yeah. And she talks a big game, but she's not going to do anything.
No.
So, I mean, seriously, both her and Mulder, like, I don't want to be stereotypical. He is literally a redneck. He's got a big red scar on the back of his head from getting struck by lightning. Like, put a bullet in that redneck's head. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I mean,
I don't believe that cops or authorities in real life should be assassins. But in shows like this where he's like obviously a bad dude, don't shoot him in the head. Do like you did with Mulder and shoot him in the shoulder or I don't know, something.
Well, you shoot him in the shoulder, then he's just going to lightning bolt you to death.
Yeah,
no, this is the dude you got to put him out. Just like, you know, the only dude.
Again, you know, not in reality. In reality, cops should not be executioners.
Well, I think in reality, people aren't shooting lightning bolts out of their whatever. So
I just want to make that clear that I don't support that in real life. But on the show, Scully, if a guy is coming towards you, just, I don't know, do something.
Yeah. Pull a Murtaugh. I just shoot him in the leg and I arrest him.
There we go.
Also, they seem to have moved the unmovable Frank because he's not in the room. So
I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Darren yells that he's done fooling around. And then Sharon's like, stop. And she steps in front of Scully's gun. Not a good decision. And like between her and Darren. And she's like, I'll go with you. But like, this needs to stop. And so Scully is like, you know, behind her, like trying to get a line at Darren. Is like, you know, we can work this out. And Sharon's like, no, we can't. And so Darren pulls her away. And then she and Darren walk through the parking lot. They obviously got out of the hospital. And they're holding hands. Sweet. And Darren tells her that she was the only person who was ever nice to him and reminds her of the green dress that she wore on the first day of school, which when she stood by the light in the window, you could kind of see through it. So that maybe wasn't a good choice to wear at school, but also creepy. And he's obviously like, you know, enthralled and happy, but she obviously is not and scared and is like, well, where are we going? And he's like, we can go anywhere you want. I got money from a cash machine. And then he's like, we can take any car you want, anything, just take your pick. And he points to he's like naming off like some import brands. I think he says like an Accord and maybe a Sentra, I forget. Anyway, and he's like, oh, or this, and he points to a Taurus and it turns on and the headlights come on, and then she kind of hangs back, not looking super happy, and he's like, you're right, all these cars suck, we can just boost one for now and then we'll get a good one later. And then we see like some lights approaching, and it's Sheriff Teller, and he pulls up in front of Darren, and he gets out of his car, and Dylan is like, Mrs. Cavott, take it easy. And he turns around and sees that she like took that opportunity to get the hell out of there. So she's like running away. Mm-hmm. And the sheriff is like, come on over here. And Darren's like, no. And he runs after Sharon. And so Teller grabs something from his car and runs after him.
Yeah. So Sharon runs into a park near the parking lot, and Mulder pops out from behind a tree, and he grabs Sharon, like kind of surprising her, and like covers her mouth so she doesn't scream. And then he pulls her back like behind this tree, like into this like bush tree foliage so they can't be seen. And Darren appears, and he's calling for Sharon. He's like, where are you? I would have given anything you wanted. And like starts crying while he's shouting. And Teller shines a light on Darren and says he wants some answers. And Darren yells back, no, I want some answers. And the wind picks up, and Darren demands to know where Sharon is. And he just keeps getting louder. There's a lot of screaming in this part, and it's viscerally uncomfortable for me to watch that kind of screaming. So it was hard for me to get through this part. It's in character. It's one of those things that for me, it's really hard to watch like loud shouting.
Yeah.
So Mulder leaves Sharon hidden, and he runs up behind Darren and he shouts at Teller to get out of there. And lightning strikes a tree and it splits in half and the top half topples over. And it seems to strike Teller's flashlight too and electrocutes him and he falls to the ground. And then lightning hits Darren and Darren falls to the ground too. And Mulder watches and he's kind of shocked by this. And then Scully runs up and Darren's on the ground twitching and smoking.
Yeah, I'm going to say, we talked about this earlier, it's not too late for a bullet. Like I am, I am totally not for cops shooting people. But, you know, they could have shot this dude. That would have been fine. It would have been cool. So, be fine. Yeah. So, then we are at Oklahoma State Psychiatric Hospital. And Scully is walking down a hall, and she joins Mulder at a door to a room with a big window in front of it. And Darren is, I'm not sure if he's standing or if he's sitting. It's almost like he's at like a control console, like looking out the door at them. It's kind of a weird scene. And Scully tells Mulder the coroner is ruling Teller's death accidental. And Mulder's like, lightning, obviously. And he asks about the observatory. And she says they also reported lightning last night, which, I mean, there was lightning. Of course they're going to. There was actually lightning, right?
Yeah.
It was created by Darren, but that doesn't not make it lightning. And so Scully says she spoke with the DA, but he has no idea how to begin building a case against Darren, right? Because, like, you know, much like what Teller was saying, like, what are you going to, like, we're accusing you of death by lightning. Like, okay. So Mulder asks about the test he asked for. And Scully's like, the results came back and, like, there was nothing unusual. Electrolytes, blood, gas levels, brainwaves, all normal. So then Mulder's kind of like, so Darren Oswald is a perfectly normal, perfectly healthy guy. And then he's like, do you believe that? And she doesn't answer. And he's like, neither do I.
Yeah.
And then we cut to inside the room, and Darren is still standing or sitting or whatever he was doing. I didn't actually pay attention. Again, it looks like he's like at a control panel, like from a Star Wars movie almost. It's kind of weird. And he's watching them through the window, and he's totally expressionless. And there's a screen with a TV in front of him down, like what I'm saying, looks like a control console. And it's constantly like switching channels. And then it lands on one that actually shows Darren in the psychiatric hospital. And then we get executive producer Chris Carter over it. And then it turns to snow. And then we get the actual black screen. And then we start with story editor Darren Morgan. So, yeah. It's a little different than the usual ending that we get.
Yeah.
Where it goes black and then we get executive producer Chris Carter.
I'm wondering if that's supposed to indicate that Darren still has some kind of electrical powers or what. I don't know.
I think it's just, I don't know. I thought that was like, I don't know. It seemed unnecessary to me to do it that way. Like, oh, you know, it'd be cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like Glenn Morgan and James Wong are back, almost in a way. But this is a Howard Gordon episode, so There's some simpatico going on, I think, between them. So, yeah.
So apparently the inspiration for this episode was like Chris Carter had some like cards in his office for things that they wanted to explore at some point in the series. And one of them simply said Lightning Boy. And the idea was that someone could control lightning, but like not how or why. So like Gordon took that and kind of worked from that. And Gordon said that he wanted the character to be kind of like a Beavis and Butthead with superpower type deal. So that might explain part of.
We did kind of get that. Yeah.
So
that would work.
Yeah. That's where that came from.
I think Chris Carter was reading some X-Men when he was thinking about the X-Files.
Anyway. Maybe.
So, yeah.
And then the farmhouse that Darren and his mom lived in is actually this house that's at the time was owned by a 94-year-old man named Vin Jackson. And he let them use the house and his cows. And they offered to pay him extra for the cows. And he's like, don't bother. They're there anyway. Just use the cows. The house also appeared in Jumanji, which is kind of a fun coincidence because Jack Black later appears in the second Jumanji movie. And he's like really good in that movie. That movie's actually pretty good. I'll say it here.
Again, where he has to play someone who, well, I guess it's not, he's playing someone who's playing, who is someone else.
Yeah, because his character is a video game avatar for a teenage girl. And he does a really good job. It's actually very well done. The whole movie is actually, I kind of watched it on a whim when I was bored. And I'm like, this is really good. So like, yeah, solid movie.
Yeah. And it is technically the second Jumanji movie. I wasn't sure because I knew there was another movie before it, like after the first one. But that one, I forgot to figure what it's called, but it's like, written, it's based on the book by the same author who wrote Jumanji. And it's more of like a video space kind of game. And apparently, aside from like the promotional material, it doesn't refer to Jumanji at all. So like, it's kind of like in the same universe and the same kind of setup.
Oh, okay. Like this,
but it's technically not considered a sequel. So a lot of people call it the reboot, but it actually is directly related to the first movie with Robin Williams. So
It is.
So it technically is a sequel.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So anyway. Yep, those were my little fun facts for the episode. And otherwise, I mean, I feel like the idea of a character who's maybe not a good person getting superpowers and, you know, using them in really stupid, I'm a young teenage guy with no ambition kind of ways is interesting. I'm not, this episode just, it's weird. It feels weird for some reason, but I don't think the premise is bad. I think that's kind of an interesting premise.
I did read something and I don't remember exactly how they phrased it, but that this is a similar kind of thing that Howard Gordon has done before, where like someone has like some kind of ability. And I was trying to think like, what other ones has he written? But I don't know. They could just mean in general too. So yeah, I'm kind of getting to the point where I almost want to stop looking at the books that I look at because they're just like all. So here's the thing. So in your notes, you have it Darren as D-A-R-R-E-N.
That's because right? That's which how is, I spell it, is, partially because of...
That's how you spell it. So here's the thing. It is spelt that way in half the books and on the X-Files fandom site. On Wikipedia, it is spelt like Darren Morgan, right. D-A-R-I-N. And then in half the books, it is spelt like that. So like, there's no... like. I have no idea which one is correct.
Yeah.
Because I read some of the books and the first ones I looked at actually spelled it like you spelled it. I'm like, okay. And then so then when I saw them feeling like Darren Morgan, I'm like, oh man, this book just like not even like doing like basic fact checking, right? They're just spelling it like Darren Morgan. And then the next book did the same thing. And I was like, huh. So then I looked on Wikipedia and Wikipedia spelled it that way. And I was like, okay, well, maybe the other books I looked at were wrong, right? They were just spelling it how they're used to spelling it. And so then I assumed the fandom page was going to look exactly like the Wikipedia page because a lot of it is just like directly like Wikipedia stuff taken from Wikipedia. But they actually spell it the way that you spelled it and like the other book spelled it. So I have no idea how it's supposed to be spelled. And we don't see his name spelled anywhere in the episode because he gets like the opening credit name stuff. So he isn't named as a character at the end. And then there's nowhere like he doesn't have a name badge.
Yeah.
I was checking to make sure like if he had a mechanical name badge, he doesn't. We don't get to see his files up close. So we have no idea how his name is spelled. I mean,
it literally doesn't matter though, because it's a TV show.
No, it doesn't. But it bugs me that like no one can, like there's no like different sources are giving different information.
I mean, you would literally need a script to know what they spelled it as.
Because yeah. Well, we're going to assume that some of these people had access to a script. So I don't want to use him, but I would almost ask you, like, what did Brian Lowry say how it's spelled?
I'd have to check.
Because I know the Frank Lovis book does say that based on printed materials, he gives us Zero's full name. So he obviously has access to some scripts or some documents, and he's one who spells it Darren with R-R-E-N. So I'm thinking that one is probably closer to being correct.
That's Clyde Bruckman. Hold on. Here we go. DPO. Yeah, he spells it like Darren Morgan.
Okay. See, so there's no consensus then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Frank Lovis says, like, oh, based on printed materials, that, you know, he gives us Zero's real name, which I forget. I don't
it's
have the
Bart
book in front of me.
Zero Licori.
Yeah, Licori. Yeah, because it's like liquor with an I on the
yeah.
end. Yeah. So he had access apparently to some printed materials, but he spells it D-A-R-R-E-N. Lowry apparently had access to printed materials, but he spells it D-A-R-I-N. So it's like,
I mean, it's possible the scripts weren't even consistent. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. It's just also because Darren Morgan is a script editor, so like, and he spells it
right, he spells it
R-A-N. Yeah. So are they, yeah, so it's like, ugh.
Who knows?
Anyway, yeah, it's just that kind of, that's the kind of stuff that irritates me. Like those are facts. Like, those should be, there shouldn't be any like, oh, we don't know. Like, that's a fact. There is a way it's supposed to be spelled, and like, we don't know. It bugs me anyway.
Yeah.
Little insight into, like, if you haven't already had too many insights into my psyche, here's another one for you. So, all right. Well, what did you think about this episode?
Well, like I said, it's kind of a weird one. I mean, it's the premise is fine. It's kind of interesting. Like, it's not the worst X-Files episode ever. It definitely wasn't terrible. Again, that shouting at the end, that's just a personal thing that has nothing to do with like the yeah. show, but that kind of thing always really just, it's hard for me to get through. So I did not enjoy that part, but I'm going to go ahead and forgive that, because again, that is a me problem.
In a way, that's kind of a credit, because it felt real to you.
Yeah, so. I mean, it did. And you know, it was, I feel like the actors were all great. Obviously, it's like Jack Black, Giovanni Ribisi, acting's fine. The story was, you know, I didn't have any major plot holes, but like nothing stood out to me as like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. So I think it all worked. It's not an episode I would watch a whole bunch, because again, that ending was hard for me to get through. And it's not the thing, like, we were, before we started recording, we started talking about how like Darren is just like not a likable guy. And I don't think you need to like every character. And especially, I don't think you need to like every protagonist or antagonist. You know, he's not a good guy. You're not really supposed to like him. He wasn't super, I mean, he was a teenager, you know, he's dumb, young, dumb kid who's doing stupid stuff with his magic powers. It's okay, I guess. Just randomly murdering people. But again, you're not supposed to like him, so that's fine. It's really hard for me to figure out what to rate this, because like, it's just kind of a weird episode. And I feel like it's hard to put a number on it for some reason.
Well, let me take some of the pressure off of you, because like you, I'm not sure what's going on, but I also like kind of agree with everything you said about like, it's not a bad episode. It's also not the best. It's a throwaway episode is what it is. It's not one that's like super memorable. I don't think anyone's going to walk away from the X-Files after like 11 seasons and be like, oh, remember season 3, episode 3, the unlikable dude with the lightning, you know, I don't think anyone's going to super remember that. Mm-mm. But it's not, again, it's not a bad episode. There's not big, like you said, there's not big plot holes. I mean, the little like 11 to 11:30 thing, and then like, well, he said he did that yesterday, but how could it have been yesterday, because the dude was killed like at midnight.
Yeah,
and that's not a big, I mean, if that's all the X-Files ever did, I'd be so freaking happy. It would be amazing. Yeah.
It's just little nitpicky stuff, right? Like, it's,
yeah,
little,
so I might be going high on this. I don't know. I'm gonna go with a 6.
Okay. I was actually thinking kind of 6, because I don't think it's middling. Like, I think it's better than that. But it's also not, like you said, not super memorable. Like, I was talking to my friend this morning, and I mentioned the episode we were going to be recording today, And she was, it took her a minute. And then I said, Jack Black. And she's like, oh yeah. And but like, that's what stood out to her was Jack Black, not the lightning dude or like the plot or so. Yeah. It's not super memorable. I think 6 is probably a good rating for it, to be honest. Cause that's pretty much where it is. It's interesting. It's an interesting story. It's not exceptional, but it's not bad.
Yeah. Based on what I gave Anasazi and Paperclip, and a lot of the problems that I expressed repeatedly with those two episodes, I almost feel like maybe I should give this one a 7, because at least that's equal to those. Again, I think we talked about this a little bit. Sometimes it's hard to compare the episodes.
Yeah.
Because there's different things going on. So like an episode might really bug the crap out of me, but I'll give it a 7. And then one that I think might actually be better, I'll give a 6. It's hard. Yeah, so
it is. It's a lot like comparing apples and oranges. Like,
yeah,
it's
like this one I might have to go back and revisit at some point. We'll see. Maybe I'll go back and rewatch it towards the end of the season and see how I feel about it again. So
yeah,
I do think the big thing that's making me drop it, and like I said, we talked about this. Did we talk about this in the beginning, or we talked about this before we started recording? I forget. You mentioned it, but just like the fact that we get a lot of like villains, right? Especially like on Mantra of the Week episodes. But like with the exception of like Irresistible or ones that are actually like literal like monsters, like, you know, the Fluke Man, like they're usually not like completely unlikable. And Darren is totally unlikable. There's like no redeeming quality to him, essentially, except maybe if you feel sorry for him.
Yeah. So, but then he like murders his best friend. He's sexually harassing his previous teacher, boss's wife.
Well, like, you know, she says like she felt bad for him because like, yeah, the fact that we realize like he's had a lot of his like cognitive issues before the lightning strike, right? You don't want to pity someone, but also you'd be like, the dude's had a rough life. Like, you got to meet people where they're at, right? I deal with that with the job I do. So, like, I totally understand that. But also, like, there's like meeting people where they're at. And there's also just people who are like, oh, you are not a good person. And again, like, did that happen because the lightning strike? Did something get damaged in lightning and he just lost inhibitions and personality change or something? We don't know. You don't get that information. So, but
and we know his mom's pretty horrible too, because she's
his mom's not spectacular. Yeah,
and so who knows? He's probably had a rough childhood, but that doesn't make it okay to just like. You know, we don't need to. Again, don't need to like the antagonist. That's totally fine.
No.
But he doesn't have any redeeming qualities at all.
Yeah, and so it kind of puts you off. And also, we know from the get go what is going on. So we have the whole episode to deal with this dude who we don't like. Right? It's not like we get the reveal that it's him the whole, you know. Oh, it was Darren the whole time. I never knew, right? It's like, we know the whole time. So the whole episode, you're going like, oh, just like get rid of this guy. He's annoying. He's gross. He's awful, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'll stick with the 6. And then, yeah, I mean, maybe by our season wrap up, that will change. I don't know. We'll get to there when we get to there.
All right. Double sixes.
Boom. All right.
Wow. We are.
Lucky roll. Oh, no.
I was going to say, we're matching up well. We're not matching up well. We did like the reversible thing with Anasazi, Blessing Way, and Paperclip, but our numbers weren't the same. But we both did like Anasazi and Paperclip had the same number, and then Blessing Way was in the middle.
Blessing Way was slower, yes.
Yeah, we both had V's as far as a chart would go. So, All right.
I Want to Rewatch is hosted by Tori and Nick and recorded at Black Cat Studios.
That's right, we made this. And be sure to join us next time as we rewatch The X-Files Season 3, Episode 4, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose.
And try to figure out
if the truth is still out there.
We make our bed. Expressions old, we know no other. Collapse, surprise, new secrets found. Blind, our serpent crown.
I got nothing else to say.
All right, that was DPO.
excuse me. No one's going to want a Belcher.
Think about how we burp, how often, like every time we're trying to record, it's like no one wants a Belcher. It's like, oh man, it shouldn't be carbonated. Like,
oh, shut up, lady. You don't know. Oh man, there, I found my in with Darren. I found my in with Darren. Now I understand him. I understand why he lashes out. All right. He can't control his mouth flatulence. I don't know what you call burps. They're not technically flatulence. I don't know what you call them anyway.
No, I don't know. Gaseous exhalations. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just making stuff up now.
I mean, farts have a fancy word, so I'm assuming burps do too, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so. I don't either.
Yeah. All righty.